Hi everyone, this is Tim Brennan with TacticsTime.com, and I have a very special guest today, Anthea Carson. So welcome, Anthea.
Hi.
So Anthea is a super active chess player here in Colorado, and she's also an author and a teacher and a chess mom and very active in the chess community. So welcome, Anthea. Glad to have you here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So first, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about the book that you wrote?
Okay, it's called How to Play Chess Like an Animal, and I have a co-author. My co-author was Brian Wall. He's a chess master, 5-time state champion of Colorado. And what it was we used to teach in an after-school chess program, and Brian used to like to teach the kids animal openings and have the kids act out animals when they learn the chess openings. So we had an idea to do a book on animal chess openings. And then we got a really great illustrator, too. And she was a Hanna-Barbera artist, and she worked on Scooby-Doo and Fat Albert. Her name is Lynn Trosham. So it's a really cute book, and it's colorful, and it's a great way for kids to get introduced to the idea of chess openings and following along in a chess game, reading a score sheet, stuff like that.
Wow, that's great. So what was your favorite part about writing the book?
Oh, gosh, there were so many fun things. First of all, I learned a lot about chess, I think. These are unorthodox openings. They're not, for the most part, they're not the kind of chess openings that you'll see very often. They're not the Ruy Lopez and the Sicilian. But there are some animal chess openings that are based off the Ruy Lopez and the Sicilian and your more standard openings. So these end up being really unseen, rarely played variations, and it's kind of nice to have those, you know, to know those and be able to play them. So I think it improved my game a lot.
Oh, that's cool.
I had a lot of fun with the illustrations, too.
Mm-hmm.
I did the coloring for the illustrations. Lynn Trosham drew them. And then I colored them on her graphics program. So I went over to her house, and she, because I have some art background, and she taught me a lot about cartooning, which I didn't know before, which was really interesting, too.
Mm-hmm. So, what would you say is your favorite animal opening?
My favorite animal opening, I think I actually like the horsefly the best.
Yeah.
And it's actually not in the first book.
Uh-huh.
But there were a lot of lost chapters or chapters that didn't the book just would have been huge if we'd have put everything in that we did. It would have been about 70 pages. Well, it is 70 pages. It would have been double that. It would have been about 150 pages and
mm-hmm.
Unaffordable because it's color printing and stuff. So we were going to do a second book, but what I've been doing is publishing I call it the lost chapters of Chess Like an Animal.
Mm-hmm.
And the horsefly is one of those. And so we're publishing those on, Squidoo, Hub Pages, and my website and stuff like that.
Yeah, so you've beaten me with that opening before. It's very annoying to play against, actually.
Yeah, and annoying, just like a horsefly. That's what I love about it, because a horsefly is annoying, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's a very tactical opening, and some good outpost squares for the knight and stuff like that. So.
Right. It's all based on getting that outpost square for the knight. That's the whole opening.
Right.
Is just getting that outpost square, which I think is kind of funny. That, you know, that's basically all you do is get that outpost.
Right. And it's one of those openings that it looks kind of silly or ridiculous, and you think your opponent doesn't know what they're doing, but then, you know, you get into a middle game and, you know, it's harder to play against it than it looks, you know.
Yeah, that's a lot of the animal openings are like that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably how they get their animal names. I mean, like the classic animal opening, and I think the first animal opening is the orangutan. You know, somebody plays that, and you think, what are they doing? Are they crazy? And then
right.
They end up giving you quite a rough time, so
yeah,
they can.
Yeah, that's very true. It's so I actually just wrote up something that was talking about tactics in general, and I talked about tactics in the opening, and that was one of the things I mentioned, and that was that you don't want to underestimate, like, quote, bad openings, because, you know, there can be a lot of hidden tactics, and especially if the other person's played it many times and you're seeing it for the first time, it can be dangerous to play against.
Right. I mean, I think in general with a lot of these unorthodox openings, or whatever you want to call it, silly openings, I think in general if you just follow sound principles, you'll be fine. You know, but some of these openings are based on either your opponent kind of goes crazy and starts attacking. Really is no attack. It things like that. So I think if you just play good chess, you're fine. If that makes any sense.
So, Anthea, let's talk about women in chess. I know everyone knows there's not a lot of women in chess. Do you have any thoughts on that subject?
Well, you know, I think there used to be more. Going way back to, like, the Renaissance and the, you know, the 1700s, 1800s, there were a lot of women in chess. So it seems kind of a more of a modern thing that there aren't that many women.
Oh, wow.
Now, maybe that's because the game took a serious turn, and in the, you know, in the 1800s or so, it was just a parlor game, so women were allowed to play. But I think when chess became, you know, got more serious and became more respected, then probably women were not going to be part of the, I don't know. I'm thinking that.
So yeah, you think it's a cultural thing? Or?
Yeah, I think so. Because women, for one thing, women are not in general going to have time for something like that. There's something that takes up that much of your time.
Right.
And study. You know, women are often busy with the kid, with, you know, raising children. And even I find myself, you know, with two, I have two kids, and
right.
I wouldn't have time to study as much as some of the players do. And then I don't really have the inclination either. I don't know if there's something about men and women and that are different there too, because I've seen where men can study chess for hours. I mean, just unbelievable amounts of time. And I think, how can they? You know, how can they stand that? So I don't know. Maybe it is a gender difference. But I can't see getting that focused into something. It's harder for me. And I think for a female, I'm one that can focus quite a bit. But I think I can't focus as much as I see a lot of men do.
It's
that's just 24/7. You know, I can't do that.
So what?
I don't know if that's making any sense, but
yeah, that's interesting. And so, what are some of your methods for studying chess?
Okay. Well, let's see. I know that I have studied books. I have done, you know, put my time in with my chess board and my. I even had at one point. I had a metal, flat metal chess board with little magnetic pieces, flat pieces that I carried around in a big notebook, and I had my, you know, some of my different chess books that I would go through the openings with. So I've taken it real, there's been times when I've taken it really seriously and used books. I've done a lot of tactics, puzzles, and stuff. And then I find that I like to, I usually end up with a lot of friends that are really good. Like, I have several friends that are masters, and I learn a lot just from looking at games with them, talking to them about the games, having them show me stuff after the game. So that's
right.
Been definitely a way of learning for me.
And over the years.
Go ahead.
Your son's made a lot of ratings improvement lately. What would you attribute some of that too?
Seems like osmosis, you know,
uh-huh.
Because he definitely does not sit down and study chess. I've studied way more than he has, but he's been there. He was there when, you know, from the time he was, I think I brought him to his first chess tournament when he was about 3 days old. And I was playing, you know. And he's been at chess tournaments, you know, he's grown up with this.
Right.
And then I used to coach chess in California, and I used to bring him with me when he was 2 and 3 years old, and I would have him out there setting up the boards and teaching the four-move checkmate. You know, he was, I think he was 3, he was able to teach that four-move checkmate to older kids.
Oh, okay, wow. So just...
And, you know, because he's just inundated. He's just grown up with it. And same with my daughter, which I think eventually my daughter will catch on to chess. Right now, she hasn't so much caught on to it or caught the chess bug, so to speak. But she knows more than she even realizes she does. You
right.
Know?
Huh. Well, that's very interesting. I mean, so what advice would you give to somebody who has a kid and they want the kid to get better at chess in general? I mean, because, I mean, not everyone can, you know, take their kid to the tournament from day 3, but...
if they want their kids to get better?
I mean, like...
At
you've
chess?
Done, you've done
I'd say just probably just try to make an effort to bring them to chess clubs. You know, if you can find chess clubs in your area, kids' chess clubs, adult chess clubs, it doesn't necessarily matter. You can bring them to adult chess clubs. But I think that's the secret, is to have them around other chess players. There's a lot of competition for kids' attention these days with, you know, computers and video games. So it's tough to get them to play a slow game like chess when they've got all the video games they can play.
Hmm.
So I do think it's better to try to keep it as a social opportunity, you know, and bring them around other kids because they'll make friends. I know with my daughter, one of the reasons she does like to go to the chess tournaments is she's got all kinds of friends there. They all play chess, and, you know, they've got a little group that they've formed.
Gotcha. Huh.
So the chess is almost the least important thing to her. The friends that she likes.
Huh.
But you know that thing about women and chess, now that I think about it, when I was in college, I was a philosophy major, and we studied, I can't remember the name of the philosopher who talked about this. I'm not sure. I'd have to look that up. But there was a philosopher talking about how women and men think differently, and that women are more multitaskers.
Hmm.
Basically, the theory that women and men think differently, that men are able to focus very intensely on one subject or on one thing to the exclusion of everything else. And women have a harder time doing that, and women are more likely to focus on multiple things at the same time. You know, like the woman typically will have dinner cooking, you know, she's taking care of the children, she's dealing with maybe a sick child, she's calling the school, she's dealing with the principal and something that happened at the school, all at the same time, right?
Right.
And that's typical for women. But this intense level of focus that goes into chess, to making a really great chess, I mean a grandmaster, a world champion, is, I think, a little more difficult for women. And I think there's actually there's definitely some philosophical literature on this subject about this difference between men and women.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there might even be some scientific data to back it up as well. And plus there's that whole thing about the two hemispheres of the brain. Like they say that women have a superhighway that runs between the two hemispheres of the brain, and men have a little country road that goes between them.
That's interesting.
You never heard that?
No.
The left and right hemispheres of the brain and all that stuff? And
well,
how
I
one
mean,
side is.
Yeah, go ahead.
One side is logic, and or what is it?
Yeah.
I forget. It's like one side is logic, one side is emotion. I forget, but
right.
You know.
Right. Yeah, I never heard the superhighway versus country path thing before that. Huh.
So, I just thought that was kind of interesting about women and chess.
Yeah, very interesting. So before we go here, do you have any other chess advice or chess thoughts or favorite chess memories or anything you want to talk about?
Well, I think if you do really want to get good at chess, you do have to put a lot of time into study. And probably studying endgames is the best way to improve. And I think that you can become very knowledgeable at chess through all this study, but
mm-hmm.
it still comes down to tournament play and your ability to perform really well at the board, which is another, I think, almost a completely different aspect of chess than just knowledge of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's almost like an Olympic sport in and of itself. Sitting there, being able to concentrate that hard and that long without making mistakes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. One of the people I like a lot is Michael De La Maza, and he talks about the difference between like chess knowledge and chess ability, and it kind of sounds like that's sort of what you're talking about. That you might have all this information about chess in your brain, but you know, can you always apply it, you know, when you're sitting down at the board and the clock's ticking and you got someone in front of you whose only objective is to crush you, you know? And
well, also there's a difference between chess ability and chess performance.
Right.
Because, like, my son clearly has a I think that my son actually is a good example of somebody that does have chess a high level of chess ability.
Right.
But then when it comes to actual performance, he's pretty hit or miss. It depends on how he's feeling that day, whether he can focus like that. So that ability, I think it really comes down to a great chess player is somebody that has that ability to discipline and focus at the board.
Right.
You know, you can put all that knowledge and all that ability into a person, but if they don't have when they're sitting there at the board trying to concentrate, to be able to do that,
the focus.
Without making mistakes. The focus. Yeah, the focus and the discipline at the board, I think, is probably the key. And I don't know what you do to improve that. Probably exercising improves that. Probably, you know, meditation, exercise, and eating right helps that just as much as anything else.
Right.
Getting enough sleep, stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a book called Flow that talks about that, where, you know, chess is one of these activities where you can kind of get in the flow and I think that's sort of what you're talking about, where you're not, you know, your brain's not going on about, you know, a million other things, you know, what you're going to eat for dinner, or, you know, all these stupid little monkey mind kind of stuff.
Monkey mind, that's a good word for it. In fact, you know what? I'm glad you brought up the monkey mind because, you know, I've been researching chess history and, I found out that chess goes back to this ancient poem called the Mahabharata.
Uh-huh.
And I've been reading it. It's fascinating. And the chess actually does come from this Katarangha, this battle inside the Mahabharata. But about halfway through the book, there's a character, and I'm going to get the names kind of wrong because it's a complicated book with all new names I've never heard before and never pronounced before and such. But anyway, he's trying to get to this paradise place or the place of wealth, and he gets halfway there and he meets a monkey on the trail.
Uh-huh.
And the monkey has this tail, and he says, "You can get past me if you can move my tail." and this guy tries to move the monkey's tail, and the tail won't move. and so he's basically saying, if you can't get to the city of wealth because you can't get past the monkey mind. And eventually the whole concept of the monkey mind does come up. And
okay.
The monkey mind concept does come from, like, ancient Hindu, you know. I mean, you hear it in Buddhism and stuff like that.
Right.
So, yeah, the monkey mind keeps you away from wisdom. It keeps you away from wealth. It keeps you away from success.
Keeps you away from playing good chess, too, even.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, I don't know. I mean, I had a tournament I played in last week where I couldn't focus at all, and I don't know why. I don't know if it was blood sugar. I don't know if I just couldn't focus. I ended up getting a piece trapped, and then after the game, I thought, what was wrong with me? I could not concentrate at all. I don't know if it was the room. room that I didn't like the room or something. It was weird.
So you had the monkey mind.
Yeah. No, it wasn't monkey mind. I was just kind of spaced out.
Spacey.
I was spacey and I didn't care and I couldn't focus. I couldn't calculate. And so I didn't But now when I talk to masters, a lot of times if you talk to a master, they'll tell you they calculate the same every move. So they have like a method that they go through. It's not random. They you know, they check every legal move and they have a process that they check off or something. And that's, I think that may be why they're so good, as they're in that habit.
Kind of like a lot of professional athletes, they have their little rituals and things that they do. Like golf players, you'll see a lot, you know, they always do two practice swings and then they take a deep breath or something, and then that's kind of like the little ritual to get in the zone kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you can, you know, get in that habit and it does become a habit, I think that's almost the key to success probably for a lot of players. They were talking about, I read somewhere someone was talking about how, you know, it's not so much that one player has, because they were talking about a player with a really great imagination and the ability to come up with all kinds of creative tactics and so forth. And they said, but basically it comes down to which person is, even if they're not calculating as far ahead or as creatively, are they accurate each time? And that's what it really comes down to. That's what they were saying, which I thought was interesting.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks, Anthea. That was great stuff. So appreciate your time. If someone wanted to get a hold of you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Well, they can email me at info@chesslikeananimal.com. They can go to my website. I have a couple of them, and one of them is animalchess.webs. And then there's just my regular Chess Like an Animal website.
Okay.
And, yeah.
And you're
lots of ways to get
you're on Twitter as Chess Animal?
I'm on Twitter as Chess Animal.
Uh-huh. Okay,
so
I'll post all your contact information as well on the website where people can download this podcast.
Yeah.
So
sounds good.
Well, thanks, Anthea, for your time. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for calling me.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
All righty, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.